I'd like to bring the Chino Basin Appropriative Pool meeting to order. Thank you. Mr. General Manager, are there any additions or reorders to the agenda?
Good morning, Madam Chair. There are no additions or need for a reorder.
Okay. Justin?
We'd like to request an additional closed session item, desalt replenishment obligation. I'm sorry. I thought I was there.
I'd like to request an additional closed session item on desalt replenishment obligation.
Are there?
Desalt replenishment obligation.
Okay. Are there any objections to the addition? Hearing none, we'll put that on the closed session items and additional. And we'll move on to the consent calendar. Are there any items that anybody wishes to pull? Can I have a motion on the consent calendar, please?
Chino Hills moves approval.
San Antonio Water Company seconds.
All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. Ontario would like to abstain from the minutes since I wasn't there and didn't have a chance to talk to Ryan.
Okay. We have an abstention from Ontario on the minutes, and are there any objections to the other items on the consent calendar? Hearing none, motion passes. Next item is business item. Item A, Ontario Overlying Non-Agricultural Pool, Proposed Water Right and Use and Proposed Methodology. Mr. General Manager.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the pool, good morning. This item has been considered by the pool on a number of occasions in the past. At last, the Water Master Board gave direction to Water Master Council, asked for Council to give an opinion on the type of property ownership as it affects the use of non-ag pool water. Council Harriman prepared the memo, distributed it, and we participated in the meeting of the ad hoc committee last Monday, 3 days ago. And I believe the chair of the committee, Mr. Polson, will report on that. We issued a staff report that is at the back table as well, in case anyone didn't get a copy. That includes Council Harriman's memo. And Mr. Polson also summarized his notes on a memo that's also available at the back table in case someone doesn't have it.
Aaron?
Madam Chair, first off, I want to thank all the members present at the ad hoc committee with regards to the discussion we had. With regards to Ontario's proposed uses, appreciate Brad's efforts with regards to the memo and helping us with our discussion as well as at the committee meeting on that day. And really, I think when we started evaluating this, right, the key piece, if you want to go through the little memo that I put together, is the fact that we really wanted to identify those three types of right-of-way areas that potentially could be utilized by Ontario. And, you know, as they've used in the past, we came to a conclusion that our first ownership type, right-of-way type, would be that, you know, on city-owned land, on right-of-way fronting city property where the city has the meter. And we were okay as a committee with the use on that type of land use, as historically has been said. It's all the other rights-of-way that we had concerns with, and the committee really focused on the city's ability to have any say or any oversight of those rights-of-way. And what ultimately came about was two other types of right-of-way areas, one where the right-of-way is managed by either an association or some special interest, and in some cases where the city actually has oversight or maintains or may even participate in that association. And then the third one, all other rights of way where there isn't an association, where the meter is held in the property owner's name and the only right of way is that particularly right in front of that one particular property. And the committee had some differing opinions. The non-ag pool participants were under the opinion that the first two points that you see on the memo, 1 and 2, as well as 3A, when the city has fee simple title on some properties, they were very comfortable and felt that that was a proper use of the non-ag. Kind of in alignment with some of the other discussions I'd had with appropriative pool members, I felt as a member who wasn't in total support of Ontario's use in the past, that the second list, the number two item I have here, that right-of-way where there's an association, seemed a little more aligned with what the pool, the other members of the pool were looking for. So in my recommendation today, after these discussions, you'll see on the last page, is really about the fact that I hope I have kind of taken in the input from my other appropriate pool members, that I think that our pool should advise Water Master that that those types of rights of way, number one and two that I've got listed here, as well as the materials that are necessary to ultimately identify those properties and to manage those properties, I think that's something we should support, and I think that's something that we as a pool have kind of discussed prior. So really, because I did send this out late last night, we were working on it. Like I said, the committee meeting was Monday, took comments yesterday and sent it out. I didn't get any comments. But if there are any concerns or questions that maybe I can help maybe answer or bring more to light as a member of that committee, I'd be more than happy to do so. And Scott, maybe you can help me if some of those questions stretch beyond my needs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think just a clarification, Darren, I'm trying to reconcile the recommendation 1 and 2 with the discussion 1, 2, 3A. So I understood you said 1, and I wasn't at the ad hoc committee meeting, that there was general agreement that 1, 2, and 3A were okay, but not 3B.
So 1 and 2 were everybody agreed upon. 3A were the participants from the non-ag who felt that that's something that maybe we should consider.
Okay.
And I had a little more difficulty with that one, only because, again, I don't think there's that oversight that we as a pool were looking for in our first conversation. So
okay.
Then the non-ag pool committee members that were there understood maybe that's why we would have it, but they still felt that 3A was probably something that we should consider.
Okay, so is 3A in the recommendation of 1 and 2?
At this time, Scott, it's not, okay. Only because, again, I was trying to capture the other discussion points that the rest of the pool members had shared with me with regards to what they were looking for. So that's open for discussion today. That can be, if these other pool members, if I've misrepresented their thoughts and desires on that, then we can add that.
Okay, and I'm just trying to understand the difference. It looks to me like 1 and 2 is essentially street right-of-way landscaping where the city has fee simple interest in the title? Is that?
Well, I think the difference is, and this was, again, comments from the non-ag pool, Ken Jessicky specifically. I think the difference is that in 3A, we're only looking at a single party, right? Not an association, not a large strip of land, but a single property owner. And a right-of-way purely in front of that property,
mm-hmm.
where the city would have little to no oversight or say in how that's managed or maintained.
I don't know, Darren. It seems like 3A talks about city fee simple title on properties. So
is that the same as 2, what you're saying?
Yeah.
And seeing that was what was unclear to me is because It was in 2, then it was pulled out of 2, and I felt that I thought there was a difference between the two, mm-hmm. but because I don't deal with those kinds of rights away, then mm-hmm. I wasn't sure. So if I'm wrong in saying that, then maybe 3A does need to be included.
I mean, Brad, would you consider that encompassed in 3A, encompassed in 2, because of the ownership?
No, I think the difference between 2 and 3A, in my understanding, was that in 2, it was clear that the city was part of some larger entity that had the interest in the property, be it the ownership interest or the maintenance responsibility. 3A was a situation where you were dealing with a right-of-way and the interest was solely the city's interest. And the question about whether that would differ from 1, from 3A, in that both have city fee simple interest, is that 1 would be situations where these are not rights of way that are at issue, but city buildings, where it's the property itself where the water is being used for city purposes, as opposed to 3A, where it's just a right-of-way that the city has the interest in. Now, in terms of whether the analysis is any different from 1 and 2 to 3A, I think to the extent it's fee simple, there's probably not a question. The other issue that came up that wasn't addressed at the meeting, but the question was posed, was I think the list, and Darren, please correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the list is presented kind of in an order of simple to easy, and then we thought the thought among the group was that if Ontario had enough potential use in the categories of 1 and 2, then the harder issue in 3B may not need to even be resolved.
And that's the other point I was trying to make too, Scott, was I'd really thought that 1 and 2 would be encompassing of all of your rights, and I kind of make mention of that too in here. In the email, I made mention of that.
Yeah.
But the question is, Brad, for me anyway, is 3A consistent because of the title interest by
the
city?
If it's fee simple interest, it should be.
Yeah, so that would be that could be something that could be included in the advice to Watermaster because of the title interest. And, you know, it would be consistent, I guess.
Right. Yeah, I think a couple things. Just a response to the concern that I guess the ad hoc committee has a concern about how much control the city would have over right-of-way where we don't own it in fee simple. From a control standpoint and the city's authority, there's no difference. We have full control over what happens within right-of-way, just like any of the cities here. You know, in terms of what types of landscaping is there, how it's irrigated. If an owner were to let landscaping die, the city has authorities in its municipal code to address that issue. Anytime somebody wants to do something in public right-of-way, whether it's dig up a utility, remove street trees, etc., they have to go through the city. So there really is no practical concern from the city having less control because we have right-of-way via easement versus fee simple property. So I just want to point that out. And then the other thing is when the city did intervene in the non-ag pool, one of the uses was clearly described as street landscaping, median and street landscaping. So it didn't go into the specifics of whether it was a right-of-way easement, which is a priority easement, or fee simple. But we think that the request to use non-ag water on any street landscaping within street right-of-way is allowable. So, and I think what the distinction that I'm understanding here is that some parties feel if we own it in fee, and Brad, I think I'd like to clarify with you, my understanding from your recommendation is that if the city owns the right-of-way in fee simple, as recorded on the title, then that's not really an issue. That's an acceptable use of non-ag water. So correct or incorrect?
Could you ask that again?
Okay, so if this for any street right-of-way landscaping where the city owns the right-of-way in fee simple, or any other property the city owns in fee simple, that the use of non-ag water on that property is acceptable, and it doesn't really matter who's handling the landscaping?
I think it could be a use under pursuant to a non-ag right. I think there is a note in the memo that
right.
We don't know. I don't know what the arrangements are with the folks who are maintaining those properties. I don't know that there's not something that says that they want to exercise their own water right. We haven't seen any paper on anything. I think what we said was it could be considered to support the non-ag use of the city.
Thank you.
I have a question for Brad. The overlying non-ag water right, I didn't see in your memo that it had to be used on that land.
Yeah, that's kind of gone away with the evolution, I guess, of the restrictions on non-ag use throughout the time since the judgment was entered and the peace agreements were approved and agreed to. And there is a provision in the judgment that says that water can be used on other property.
And you have to remember, non-ag water is transferred to the appropriate pool and used everywhere. Every year, non-ag pool dedicates 10% towards desalter replenishment. So
Brad, you said there's a provision in the judgment that says it could be used elsewhere. I'm sorry, can I ask you where that's at?
I have it in my memo. I can't quote it chapter and verse off the top of my head, but I can find it for you.
Okay.
Again, so, I mean, as the committee chair, you know, my recommendation is there. And because it's not an actionable item, it's more of an advice, correct, Peter? This is, as a pool, we're trying to give you our consensus on what we feel as a group we can get our arms around. Madam Chair, I guess I'm questioning how we do that.
I guess the first I'd like to, Justin has a question, I'd like to give him an opportunity to ask it.
I just want to make sure I fully understand the difference between 2 and 3A. 3A, the way I read it, is that there is an owner of abutting property responsible for the metered use of water on property that the city owns in fee simple title.
So right of way.
It's not a dedicated meter use for use of that water on the fee simple property. It is mixed with a usage off that fee simple property. So there's going to be an accounting issue with that 3A that is not in existence with 2.
There's 2A, there'd be an accounting issue as well.
With 2? But 2, there's at least a dedicated meter for that irrigation.
That's true.
On that fee simple property that the city owns.
That would be very true.
It's not a, it may be through a management district.
Very true.
So 3A has an apportionment issue on what is a reasonable percentage.
Exactly.
I think two could as well.
Right.
I think you know, when you get into a large city with over 30,000 meters, you have just about every type of arrangement.
I think you would, Scott. But in two, I would think that if this is part of an association, those ag meters, those irrigation meters, are always separate.
It's like a landscaping district. It doesn't necessarily have to be.
Yeah. Sometimes you have landscape districts where they're responsible for not only the right-of-way, but the frontage within the commercial private properties. And so, mm-hmm. to me, that would be in two. And so I think we kind of have two issues here. One is what uses are okay, and then to the extent that we can account for something efficiently and accurately, that's almost another issue that Brad didn't really touch on up in his memo, but I think the ad hoc committee.
We discussed the points that are there, Scott, with regards to the information we feel would be necessary to make that allocation. We talked about what would be necessary originally to set up a new account or a new use, and then a long-term reporting on how you would report them. And again, those are just kind of the information we felt would be necessary. We thought that there would also need to be a discussion with Watermaster staff to make sure that as they go to design and create this as part of an assessment package, that their input was taken with regards to, you know, is all the information there they need. So, and again, Scott, I think Justin brought up a good point there. I think some of the fee simple property, if it is a commercial property only, there is a potential in some cases on some of the older property where there wasn't a separation of irrigation and domestic, where you could really have one meter supplying a commercial property that would be both domestic and landscape use.
Mm-hmm.
As for city right-of-way, their irrigation as well as their domestic use.
We have that as well.
And so I think, Scott, what I was trying to get at, and I think Brad made good point of it, was that as we go down this list, and one is very acceptable, number two is acceptable, 3A kind of has some caveats to it, mm-hmm. and wasn't at this point really prepared to say 3A was 100% mm-hmm. acceptable. It may be with the appropriate information that you could provide, that it could be. I think it would be good to see if you could present a, well, here are the ones I want to use, and if we could put them in those orders. Mm-hmm. The hope would be is that we could resolve your allotment with 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
And then if we needed to go into 3-way to fully utilize your allotment,
right.
then we could look at those particular ones special.
Yes, and we would need to.
Okay.
And part of that, though, depends on what happens with the pending desalter replenishment.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's, I don't know if that's the purpose of closed session today, but mm-hmm. depending on the other one, that might be sufficient. But we're obviously like any water retailer, when we secure water rights, we want the flexibility to use mm-hmm. them however we can. And I would still say, I would suggest that if the real concern is whether or not the city has control or can accurately account for the water use in these different situations, I'm confident that we can. We have in the fiscal, I think it was production year 13-14, we submitted for a number of non-ag uses that fall into some of these categories, and it's still pending with Watermaster. So it hasn't been acted on one way or the other. It's not in the assessment package at this point. So perhaps we could take those, and we could provide information along these lines. But I'm confident those of us that work in cities know that we do exercise full control over the public right away.
Yeah, Scott, maybe just to be able to move this along, perhaps Darren's suggestion is reasonable if there's consensus with the elements that he's brought forth, that you concur with those, and then if you want to bring back a specific, you know, situation that maybe falls into the 3A category or what have you, then we have another discussion and some additional advice to Watermaster at that time relative to those issues, just to be able to push to get you some resolution here, hopefully.
Sure. I would say that from Ontario's standpoint, you know, this item is really for this pool to provide their thoughts on the matter to Watermaster. Non-ag has already done that. They're mm-hmm. they're agreeable to approving the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Ontario has already provided our input. Mm-hmm. I may follow up with another letter to Watermaster. So I think if this pool wants to provide advice by way of a motion today, that's fine. We would abstain from it because we've already provided our input.
And I don't know if there's any other appropriate pool members that have concerns with, you know, the 3A at this juncture.
My expectation is that this would kind of wrap up this ad hoc committee, and mm-hmm. whatever the group feels like they want to provide is their thoughts to Watermaster, and then we would expect that Watermaster would take the input from various pools and then mm-hmm. make a decision and move forward, because I think we spent enough time on it. And you know, when we intervened, nobody objected to this use. Now it wasn't gone over in detail, but we do feel like this is kind of revisiting something that already went to the court and was approved. So mm-hmm. It's more a matter of just working out the logistics.
And I guess I'd ask Brad, you know, in terms of the intervention, does it, you know, can intervene in a pool, but you don't necessarily have to define all the ways in which you're gonna, you know, exercise your, I guess, position in that new pool. As a member of that new pool, is that correct?
Well, I wasn't around at the time of the intervention, but my understanding from reviewing the documents is that there were representations made by Ontario, and based on those representations, the Watermaster Pools Advisory and the board recommended to the court that Ontario be allowed to intervene into the non-ag pool. Mm-hmm. The approval by the court is simply Ontario's granted intervention as a member of the pool, subject to all the provisions of all the guidance documents as to what that means.
Mm-hmm. So
I would say that I think Scott is correct that some of these permutations weren't addressed at the time of the intervention, but I think in my reading, that's because some of the proposals that are being made now are different from what was discussed at that time.
Mm-hmm. Justin?
Well, just to move things along, I think the committee, and I apologize for not being able to attend the last meeting, but I think we would concur with the recommendation, so I'd be happy to move it, or second a motion if Darren, you want to move it.
So that your motion is to make the recommendation that the subcommittee chair has presented to the appropriative pool today.
Yes.
In terms of advice to Watermaster.
The memo ends with a proposed motion, and I would just move that motion.
Madam Chair, may I just make a clarification? I just want to make sure if there's going to be a formal motion that it's clear what it's on, just for the record.
Mm-hmm.
So one and two, Darren, is essentially if the city owns the right-of-way by way of fee simple recordation on the title, any right-of-way fee simple on the title that use for the non-ag water would be acceptable.
I think, Scott, because I'm not clear, and Brad, help me here, I think in both cases, and when I think you're trying, that moves it to is items in two are always fee simple or not fee simple. Brad, question for you.
Item one. is always. Two, we haven't seen the documentation, but the understanding on two was that it was the city was part of a group that either owned it or had the sufficient right to manage it.
And I think, Scott, that's the difference. But I think if I say only fee simple, it brings in 3A. And I think in my mind, you know, from the discussion we had, 2 is different in the sense that I see 3 as being a single property owner, where item 2 is a much more significant land usage for an association or a special interest group.
Okay. Well, if it's, I mean, this is a this is for Peter, for you and Brad. So if it's clear to you, still not 100% clear to me, but I'm going to abstain either way. So.
That's a good question. Is the recommendation on the memo clear to staff?
So it is.
Okay.
And the one thing that's being excluded from the recommendation is 3A, which is city right-of-way that may be owned fee simple but being maintained by a single property owner.
Okay.
Right?
Correct.
That's excluded. What is included is property owned by the city outright, right-of-way owned by the city in fee simple, whether the city maintains it or whether the city is part of an LMD or some other district that maintains it.
Okay.
And that, based on the documentation that is requested as part of the recommendation, would be okay to make a non-ag assignment from Ontario non-ag to Ontario appropriative to cover it.
That's correct.
There's a motion, I guess?
If that's appropriate at this time, Madam Chair.
At this point, as the motion maker, I would like to stay with what I have. And if Justin, if you're good with the second, then.
Yes, sir. I'm good with the second.
So we have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye, and an abstention. Aye. And all those in favor say aye, please.
Aye.
Any opposed?
I would abstain.
Yeah. All right. Motion carries. Thank you. The next item on the business calendar is budget transfer form T15-06-01.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the appropriative pool. This is in regards to budget transfer form T-15-06-01. It is in your staff page. Can we drop that down? Let's see if that's causing it. I apologize. We had a service out. We've been having some difficulties with our microphones, and we've been adjusting them, so it sounds like now we've got the handheld mics that seem to work fine, but maybe the cell phones don't. So, again, this is in your packet, page 77. First of all, let me just briefly walk you through this document. It is a net zero document, which basically means the sources of funds and the uses of funds are zero. So first of all, there are no new budget amendments. We're not increasing the budget. The budget still stays at $8.9 million. There are no new assessments, so we're not going to be assessing for these dollars. If you look at the document on page 83, you'll see that there's 5 sources of the funds and there's 2 uses of the funds. You'll see that we're reallocating $128,007 from the Wildermuth Engineering budget. We're reallocating $59,000 from the Brownstein budget. We're reallocating from the AgPool Special Fund $50,000, from the Comprehensive Recharge O&M $182,000, and then finally we're reallocating staff salaries of $78,000. That totals $497,000, so those 5 categories are our sources of funds. The uses where we're actually transferring the funds, Safefield recalculation $334,000, the personnel matters $85,000, so $419,007 being transferred into the legal budget. And then for OBMP salaries and production monitoring salaries, $78,000 Those two items total $497,250. Again, no change in the overall budget. We're just reallocating funds within the budget. And the action for today is recommend advisory committee approval of budget form T-15-06-01.
Any questions for Joe?
I have a question. So part of this recommendation is to move out $128,000 from the Wilderman budget to cover other expenses. Peter, do we anticipate the need to replenish that $128,000 before we close the books on this fiscal year?
No, we're at the end of the fiscal year. So this is kind of end of the year
reconciliation.
Okay, thanks.
Also, I should note that these transfers have already taken place to close the books for June 30, 2015. I did go ahead and process these forms within the financials, so they have been booked.
Is there a motion?
Move for approval. Chino Hills, second.
All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
The next item is member status changes. Peter?
Oh, Madam Chair, I think you're on the non-ag pool agenda.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I grab the wrong? I'm sorry. Pardon me. The next item is reports and updates. I was a little confused by that. I was like, what's that going to be about?
Morning, Madam Chair, members of the pool committee. I've got a couple items to update you on. The first thing I'd like to do is just circle back to Terry's question. I had an opportunity to find the provision in the judgment that I'd been thinking of. It's in paragraph 8, which is entitled Overlying Rights. And the language is that no portion of the safe yield of the basin exists to satisfy unexercised overlying rights. Such rights have been lost by prescription. However, uses may be made of basin water on overlying lands which have no preserved overlying rights pursuant to the physical solution herein.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Brad.
First item I had was the August 21st court hearing. On July 10th, the Water Master filed two separate documents with the court. The first that I'll touch on quickly was a request for approval of the intervention of Monta Vista Water District into the non-ag pool, and a request that the court receive the most recent annual report. There's been no filings in regard to those requests, and those are unopposed at this time. The second that was filed was a Water Master status report regarding the safe yield redetermination and reset process. This was the first status report that had been filed since a status report was filed last April of 2014. The status report requested two things. The order that was attached to the status report requested two things. First, that the court accept the status report, and second, that the court order the parties, or order Water Master and the parties, to come back by October 1st with a motion for approval of a safe field reset proposal. On Tuesday of this week, the City of Chino filed what they titled a supplement to that status report, and that supplement requests various things, including that the court appoint a special master to deal with this issue, and that the court not reset the safe yield pursuant to what's described in the supplement as a anticipated proposal coming out of the key principles. We've received that Tuesday evening. We're working through how Water Master might respond. We don't have direction from the board as to the precise response at this point. My personal opinion is that the points that are raised by Chino go to what may be in a motion when there's a settlement agreement reached to go forward with. And so in that regard, I think they're premature as they go to substantive issues for what's anticipated to be requested, as opposed to the more procedural request that's before the court right now, as to setting a deadline for that the motion with the substance to be filed.
So, Brad, just a question for you on the hearing date, because the what's before the court is to some degree procedural. What do you think the court's reaction will be with regard to the supplemental filing?
I never,
well, you know, I don't
never
believe,
like
you can't
to predict
presume
what the court
yeah.
might do.
So it's unknown really at this time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Just a quick follow up there, Brad. So your you haven't received, you know, formal, you know, from the board direction of any sort, but your expectation is that Watermaster will state this is procedural and most of the substance of the supplement needs to be addressed in the follow-up filing.
If I were asked, that's the opinion I would give. I don't have direction from the board as to any any official Watermaster stance at this point.
Any other questions for Brad on that item? Move on to the next item.
The second item I have to report on is the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act proposed basin boundary revision regulations. This item has been touched on a few different times. Just a real brief summary. Chino Basin is expressly exempted from the requirement of a Sustainable Groundwater Management Plan under the Act. The extent of that exemption applies only to the extent of the adjudicated boundaries. There are discrepancies or incongruities between the adjudicated basin boundary and the Bulletin 118 boundary that the state considers to be the Chino Basin boundary. There are two different issues that come up in regard to those discrepancies. The first is there is an offset between the adjudicated boundaries of Six Basins, Cucamonga Basin, for example, where there's no lack of any coverage of adjudication, but the adjudication boundaries are just offset or different than the 118 boundaries. There's a separate issue in what DWR had called orphan areas previously. They're now referring to this as fringe areas, where the extent of the adjudication boundary is smaller than the Bulletin 118 boundary, and you'll see that in the southern boundaries of the Chino Basin, kind of the southeast boundary. And in that case, if the exemption for the Chino Basin only goes to the extent of the adjudicated boundary, but a plan is required throughout the Bulletin 118 Basin, there could be the prospect of a requirement of a plan within those fringe areas. So those are the two basin boundary issues that we've identified that are relevant to this basin. And the concern about the former is that there's some uncertainty about management because of the offset and the fact that the adjudicated boundaries and the 118 boundaries aren't the same. What does that mean for the water masters in those cases? If the boundary can be revised to the adjudication boundary, then there's no question at all. In regard to the second, if a plan is required and the county is the presumptive groundwater sustainability agency to develop that plan if no one else comes forward, if a plan is required, what does that mean for the adjudication? In this case, you have a 35-year-old adjudication. Things are running well. The basin's been under sustainable management. And what would the effect of a new groundwater sustainability plan in a neighboring area that is, I think Wildermuth would say clearly, hydraulically connected to this basin, what would the effect of a new and perhaps inconsistent plan be? If that issue can be addressed through changing the basin boundaries, that would be do away with the uncertainty there as well. And I think that concern is protecting the investments that the parties have made in the management of this basin and not having to be concerned about that type of uncertainty. So what the board asked us to do was look at the basin boundary regulations as they're drafted and let the board know whether there are any proposed comments that we would make. We've identified three different proposed comments. I can walk through them with you very quickly. At this point, what we're asking from you all is to take a look at this, and I know you just got it today, but to take a look at it and give us any feedback you might have, either individually as a pool, before we go to the board at the end of the month or in 2 weeks, and let it know what our recommendation is in terms of any comments on behalf of Watermaster. And the deadline for comments is September 4th. There is a meeting on September 3rd in Santa Ana where DWR will basically have an open house and accept public comment. In that forum, the comments can also be submitted electronically.
So, Brad, when would you like comments back from this pool or individuals?
As soon as you have them, no later than, I think, the board meeting would be great.
Brad, have you reached out to the other ordering Watermasters, I guess? Or
there's not been a formal reach out. We've been in discussions for many months with folks who are active in both basins.
Mm-hmm.
And I've also been talking with Bob Page, who's the county's representative, about what the county's perspective is on the both the basin boundary revision issue, as well as how these fringe areas, which, as I said, are presumptively going to be the responsibility of the county if there isn't some other mechanism for addressing them. So we've, in answer to your question, there hasn't been real formal communication, but we've had discussions about what's going on and being on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
If you'd like, I can real quickly walk through the three proposed comments.
Please, yeah.
Okay. The first is in regard to what are called internal boundary modifications. The in the case of these boundary offsets that I talked about with the examples of Cucamonga and Six Basins, there is a provision in the draft regulations as they exist right now that would allow for that to be revised. There would need to be a showing that there's universal support among the affected entities for that change. And the informal feedback we've had is that the neighboring Watermasters would be in support of that. The other showing that would need to be made is that there would not be a there would still be the ability to have sustainable management with the revised boundaries. In my view, that's not an issue because you've got existing judgments and adjudications that have functioned for a number of years. And so the comment there might be that there's support for a mechanism that would allow those offsets to be revised. And that there may even it may even be beneficial to have a presumption of the historical sustainable groundwater management, so that that second showing doesn't there's not a high bar for that showing, because there is already an express exemption for adjudicated areas, which I think indicates a presumption that there's sustainable management going on there. So it might lower the bar for the in the case of adjudicated boundary conforming to adjudicated boundaries. Yes, Ron?
Quick question. Are there any existing production facilities within these sliver adjustments that would go back and forth?
I think there are, yes. Wildermuth has been asked to put together a figure or some kind of a tabulation of what those are. In regard to the issues where you have an offset between the adjudication and the 118, but there's no lack of coverage between the adjudications, there you already have those producers who are in those offset areas being managed as part of the adjudication, as opposed to part of the 118 basin that they're in.
Don't reconcile it to 118.
Correct. And changing the judgment boundaries would be almost an impossible lift, I think.
Thanks.
How big are these boundary offsets? Are we talking hundreds of feet, or were we...
Andy might better be able to answer that.
Yeah, I would say hundreds to maybe even thousands of feet in some cases. Yeah, and we will come prepared shortly with a map and well locations to illustrate it.
Thanks.
Bob.
Jerry.
Yes.
Regarding your question about coordination with other Watermasters, The county has drafted an invitation to each one of the water masters to sit down with them and talk about issues of mutual concern. Mm-hmm. Part of our goal would be to see if there's an opportunity and to encourage commenting on the regulations regarding basin changes. Mm-hmm. The other issue that we're also looking at that they haven't drafted regulations for is how to address those minimal fringe areas and fringe areas. They right now they're looking at just how to change the boundaries to address that issue, but they've also by January will develop regulations specifically on what to require of those fringe areas. And yesterday in a conference call with DWR and counties coordinated by our association CSAC, DWR officials did say that they believe that SGMA applies to those areas. They have to be managed. If they're minimal fringe areas, which I think is primarily the case with the fringe areas around Chino Basin Watermaster, they indicated that they're entertaining the idea of some lesser technical standard on how that is managed and shown to be sustainable rather than the old GSP, mm-hmm. which we would support as a county because we don't have the capacity staff-wise to do mm-hmm. that.
Mm-hmm. The ultimate goal, though, would maybe to be to have the boundary adjusted to fit the adjudication and then not have to do plan or additional studies that, you know, may be duplicative or conflicting with what we have in place. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much.
The second issue was in regard to fringe areas, and you know, I would echo the comments that Bob made about finding a way to address them without a full-blown plan. The other possibility that was discussed when Peter and I met with DWR in May was there's a provision in the Act that says you can make a showing that there's an alternative to a plan that serves the sustainable groundwater management goals, and that in the case of an adjudication where you have what Bob called the minimal fringe areas, perhaps the adjudication, if it takes into consideration the function and the operation within the entire basin, even though the adjudicated boundary is smaller, it may serve as an alternative to a plan, and a plan might not need to be developed for those fringe areas. So the comment we would make, we'd propose to make in regard to fringe areas is just that it's an important issue, particularly given the investments that have been made in these adjudicated areas and the operation that's been ongoing in this basin for over 35 years, and that to the extent DWR doesn't want to address that through a boundary change, as we talked about, or as you'd mentioned, Rosemary, that it be clear that there are other mechanisms, such as the alternative process or this lessened technical standard, to allow that to be addressed without a full-blown plan. Mm-hmm. And the last is really just a procedural issue. The regulations as they are drafted right now allow only for local agencies to request a boundary change. This water master and other water masters that are technically extensions of the court and not local agencies would not be able to make those requests. In my mind, that is a little short-sighted to have that requirement, particularly given that basins where there are court-appointed water masters that are extensions of the court are exempted because of the presumption of their sustainable management. And so if there are concerns regarding those basin boundaries, it doesn't make sense to me that the water master, as a representative of all those parties, shouldn't be allowed to make that request, and that instead it should have to be a local agency that is a member of or a party to the judgment. Mm-hmm. Again, any feedback you can give, whether through the pool or individually, before we go to the board in 2 weeks would be greatly appreciated.
Okay. Does anybody have any other questions for Brad? Seeing none, we'll move on with the agenda. Thank you so much, Brad. There's no engineering report, there's no CFO report, so we'll move to general manager's reports.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
First item.
The first item is an update for the pool on where we are on the safe yield redetermination and reset. Though most of you know, but it's good for everyone to hear. We are in the process of drafting the final agreement, and the drafting has gone, I would think, very well and is on schedule. We expect to have a substantially completed draft at the end of the next drafting session, which is tomorrow. The if need be, there might be additional conversations, but our expectation is we'll take the substantially completed draft to the board and look for the board's direction. That would be at the August meeting, at the August board meeting, and look for the board's direction to bring the substantially completed draft through the pools and advisory in September for any feedback and comments from the pools and advisory. And finally, to the board in September for direction to file with the court after the board meeting. As Brad mentioned, there is the was a supplement by the city of Chino that has been filed that needs to be addressed, and we'll see how that gets addressed after there's some deliberation by council. I did want to give you a heads up that this will likely delay the final decision by the court, and since a lot of the provisions of the agreement affect how assessments are calculated, we will likely have to use a process that is not our standard process for assessments this year. We won't be done in time for an assessment package to be prepared, presented, approved by November. So we're working on that, and we'll keep you posted on the process and what that looks like.
Mm-hmm. A couple of questions. Peter, if this is looking to go to the board in September and file in September, what's the timing with respect to everybody signing the agreement or those that are going to sign it? Are you expecting that to be done prior to it going to court, I would assume?
What's happened in the past for Peace and Peace 2 agreements has been that some of the parties have been able, based on the timing and their process, to have it signed before it goes to the court. There have also been times where the motion has been filed, but prior to the hearing, the approval of the parties have been obtained. And I would anticipate might be a similar in this case, especially because I know there are some parties where their governing boards are dark for periods of summer and early fall.
Okay. And then second question, Peter, on the assessment package, you may not have the details yet, but did I understand that we're gonna implement the agreement in the assessment package, or we're gonna have to hold off?
We're thinking about it. Our sense is that we probably should hold off until it gets approved. And as an example, one of the questions is desalter replenishment obligation.
Yeah.
And it's a year prior plus the year that just closed. What do we do with that? And so it'd be a little awkward to have an assessment package that includes a provision that hasn't yet been approved by the court.
Or even the safe yield number itself,
right? So we're looking at, exactly. So we're looking at tracking the timing, seeing how that plays out. I believe about 4 years ago, we did half a year's assessment, and then the other half, who knows?
Okay.
Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
So that's all I have on that item, Madam Chair.
Okay.
The second item is a small process improvement for submittal of documents to Water Master. We're always trying to provide as good a service as we can, and when we get electronic documents, there is no issue. Documents that are given to us in person sometimes can fall out of sight and can be lost in process. And so we're looking at anything that is submitted to Water Master, whether it's water activity reports or voluntary agreements or Exhibit G forms. What we'd like to start doing from now on is if you turn something to us in person, to go to the front office where Bianca sits, give it to her, she will stamp it with a date stamp, she will initial it, she will give you a copy back with that date stamp, and that will be your proof for your records that has been submitted and received. We were concerned about documents that get turned in, may get misplaced by us, or may not get turned in and claimed for later, and us not being able to provide the service that you would expect the Water Master. So please help us with that, and anything you submit in person, make sure that it's given to Bianca, stamped, initialed, and then it stays with Bianca. Don't take it and run to the back office to hand it off to Danny or anybody else. Just leave it with Bianca. Okay. Mm-hmm. Any questions on that? Thank you.
So she's going to give you a copy, a photocopy of it.
She will give you a photocopy with a date stamp and her mm-hmm. initials on it, and then she will be responsible for keeping it, logging it, and getting it to the right person. Mm-hmm. Next on the list is a heads up on the water activity reports. We're putting those together. You can expect to receive those by the end of August, and this year they'll look just a little bit different. They will have a sheet that will ask you to indicate how you would like to meet your desalter replenishment obligation. This is on the assumption that everything is approved, and if that's the case, there is a desalter replenishment obligation for 2 years ago, and there's one for this year. So there will actually be two sheets. Moving forward, there will be a single sheet for the year prior. That you will have options on how to meet your desalter replenishment obligation, so the sheet will try to make it clear. So make it easy for you to indicate where that water would come from.
If it's not approved, I mean, isn't there a larger desalter obligation?
If it's not approved, there is a larger desalter.
And is that going to just kind of be on pause?
I think so. I think it's safer that way.
Okay.
Yeah. So when is the sheet going to come around?
With the water activity reports, okay. And you can expect to receive those the last week of August, a couple of weeks from now.
Okay. Is it going to have a checkbox for non-ag?
We had this discussion, didn't we?
We've talked about that, and since the pool hasn't had the discussion yet, where Danny and I left it is we didn't want to kindle the fire. Uh-huh. And so at this point, it's not going to have the checkbox, but you can always add it by hand.
Just a quick question. When is that? Is the ad hoc committee still going to take up the desalter use? Or is that, what's the next step there?
Well, I mean, we talked a little bit about that in the ad hoc committee, and we thought that there was some direction given by the board back to Watermaster with regards to that they wanted a report back on that before it moved to the ad hoc committee again. In my mind, the ad hoc committee doesn't own it at this point. Am I mistaken there, Peter?
My understanding is the same as yours, Darren. It's the same as actually what you said earlier, Scott, is that the ad hoc committee's role has been fulfilled and is now finished. The ad hoc committee was there really to deal with the one issue of non-ag pool water on right-of-way.
Okay.
And it's more general than just Ontario. It's right. You know, it's broader than that. As I recall the board meeting, the city asked for Watermaster as a whole to focus on that issue, non-ag water use on right-of-way, and let the desalter replenishment obligation issue trail. Mm-hmm. And so my understanding was that the pool would take up the desalter replenishment obligation issue now that we've moved beyond the right-of-way
yeah.
issue. And I think that may be your first opportunity, may be your confidential session today, and I think Buena Vista has
okay.
some thoughts to share.
Okay. Okay, and then so for the right-of-way piece, is that going to go to the advisory, or do you have the input you need, and you'll get back to Ontario?
For the right-of-way, we asked for advice and counsel from the pools. We don't need the advisory committee to vote on anything. We have this pool's recommendation, non-ag pool, and hopefully today the ag pool will tell us where they stand. That's all the direction we need in order to do our accounting.
Information. You have information items in your packet. Any pool member comments at this time?
Can I just ask a real quick question that I should have asked on an item before? The budget item, the budget transfer. Are those items, particularly the engineering items that were where funding was transferred out, are we basically saying that funding is not required this year? And we're just not doing that, or can we expect that the activity that funding would have funded to appear on a future budget? And if that was already in the staff report, I apologize for missing it.
No, the majority of those funds were items that were budgeted for, but the work was not done, and it is not being carried over into the next year.
So we do not expect that?
Correct.
We won't see additional funding required in the following year?
Yes, correct.
Thank you, sir.
Though there is some carryover. There's some carryover of engineering funds into next year.
But not in the transfer.
But not that.
But not in the transfer, correct.
Yeah.
Other business? None. Confidential session, so I think we're going to convene that now at this time.
Thank you.
So, Anna, we started our closed session at approximately 10:15, and we concluded it at 11:13, I would say, and there's no reportable action, Peter. And let's see, there's a list of meetings for your consideration. I guess Friday is important for a lot of people, but that concludes the appropriate pool meeting.